there is an LFC recording with a few others. Just want to make sure you have that on your calendar or schedule, or probably not.
I do not see it on my calendar, and I apologize, Robin, but if you want to make an official announcement.
During lunch hour, so there'll be a recording for a localization fireside chat. And this is where we'll be talking about the origin or the start of CLIA. How did we start? Why did we start? And there are three members supposed to be here. I'm not sure how many of them will be showing up, but three members that help craft what we are today. They'll be joining me this afternoon as well. So unless I'm missing anybody, that's the program. It should take us to about a 45 minutes conversation. Lola, if you're around, Kim, Maryse, can you put your cameras on? And
we are get on camera, Robin, and we are here, the three of us.
Oh, good. Excellent.
Definitely here.
Good to see you all.
Nice seeing you too.
Excellent. Let me put this in a gallery view so I can see all of you. There you go. Is Maryse on?
I'm right here.
Oh, here you are. Yeah, I see you now. Kim, good to see you. Great.
Hello.
Hello, hello. Oh, you're all orangey there, Kim. And I got Peter here.
That matches my hair.
Excellent. This is part of the localization fireside chat. Tradition, I guess, where we talk a little bit during lunch hour, not because it's less of an important, it is important. However, this conversation takes us back a little bit in history as to how we started this, the organization that we're in, CLIA, what was before CLIA, how did we got here, etc. So I want to welcome everyone back. And as we carry the energy from the morning session, it was great sessions so far, the keynote, the first panel, the second panel. I think we're feeling a little bit more energized after the 2-3 sessions that we've had this morning. So let's continue on. And for this particular conversation, we're going to use a localization fireside chat sort of style. We will record this conversation. We'll publish it later on the channel as well, so to give you a little bit more amplification to it. So happy to have with me today Maryse Benhoff, Lola Bandana, and Kim Pines. And I have prepared a little bit of a journey, going to take us a little back to where we started and where we are right now. So for those who don't know, and then you are now dealing with got used to the word CLIA or the name CLIA. CLIA was Alia before we rebranded a few years ago. And that's what the organization, the association was known for many years, for many decades for that matter. And in 2021, I think, we as a board members, we all decided or voted on perhaps a new rebranding the association, hence the name CLIA came up. So I want to start by asking, if you don't mind, Lola, this is for you. Let's start with you, put you on the spot. Sorry, get us going here. Before CLIA existed, what was missing, in your opinion? What was the gap in the industry that made someone say, we need to build something here?
Thank you, Robin, and hello, everyone. I think one of the most important pieces that was missing was the conversation. The connection between all of us. So CLIA, or back then ALIA, became the voice of the language industry. That was how we started. We need an organization, a place that will bring us together and will be the voice of the language industry in Canada. So that was the piece missing. We were, and we talk a lot about fragmentation, right? And still that's something that will be there for a while, but we need to recognize what is the difference that we have made over the last 23, almost 24 years, because the fragmentation that existed back then is very different than the difference that we have right now. So it is basically the communication for me. And I'll bring Maryse and Kim to share her ideas on what was missing, but that for me was the critical piece.
I'd have to agree with Lola. The same thing, to bring us together as almost a trade association. Every industry seemed to have one, and we didn't. and the communications between us, it was key. And I to this day, it's still very, very important that we get together and we talk about what's happening in the industry, just like we are today.
Thank you, Kim. What's your take, Maurice?
Yeah, the fundamental, I'd say the crystallization that came about with the creation of Alia, it persists. And I think we're able to grow tremendously from each other, learning from each other, sharing the woes of the day's activities, right? Which is part and parcel of this, of the work, or our environment at Clia. I still get stuck on it. You know, I'm from the old group when it was the other name. I still so fumble sometimes. But I think it's grown from that creation of something that was needed to a place where, you know, CLIA actively participates in many activities. It supports standardization, it both nationally and internationally. So it's grown into itself, and those things that are needed and that we see and that we're able to act upon.
Does anybody remember when what year was it established initially, and who was the first president?
Dan Vincent, and that was in 2003.
Yes.
2003.
And
definitely grew since then, that's for sure. I mean, look at the caliber of the conversation we're having right now at a global level.
Absolutely.
It's pretty amazing. And I remember early on when we got started, there was many stakeholders involved, like it is right now, on at least on the Canadian level, not the global level. There was government involvement. There's a lot of other stakeholder industry involvement. There's education and academia involvement. There's many other things. Similar
right.
settings that we what we have right now. Have you seen any changes in this, Kim, on your side?
There have been a lot of changes. We originally, back at the very beginning, had support from the government. Eventually, I forget what year it was, we had to take over and become self-supporting. That was a huge change for us, and it was a long struggle to we actually went a bit into debt, and then it was a long struggle to come back out of that when we lost the support. But it made us stronger. In the end, we've come out better at the end of the day.
And specifically for you, Kim, what made you get involved?
Well, actually, I have to blame one of the past presidents for that. I attended a meeting and they held the AGM, and I said, no, let's go out for lunch. And she said, no, let's attend the AGM. Anyway, I joined because I joined as a company first, but I really enjoyed my time with the board and getting to know everybody. And there's people, when I have an issue, I can reach out to anybody and say, hey, I have a question about this, or how did you handle this? So the interaction and getting to know everybody was very, very important to me. And I thought I could help and make a difference.
Absolutely. And, you know, I noticed this camaraderie between the members and the association itself. Like, it doesn't matter which committee you happen to be on. I feel like people jump in, roll up their sleeves, and help whatever help is needed. It's not like, oh, I only work in communication, I don't work in the other committees. I feel like people will ask for support, they get the support, and people are not shy of offering help, which is great. Now, take me back through the moment where the association became real. What was the first thing that made you think, oh my God, this is going to work? This is actually going to work. Because at the beginning of everything, right, you always have a question mark. You don't know if this is going to go south or it's going to work for everybody. Who wants to take this on? Maurice, can I answer that question? Are you familiar with this question?
I think it stems from actually the beginning, where an association is created because there's a need for it. It continues to exist because there's a need for it. It starts to thrive because there's a need for it. As Lola was saying before, it was a very fractured industry. where now we are talking to each other. We are openly talking in some of the get-togethers that we have about business management. We're actually talking to each other about, you got to be a member to attend these. They're private. So, you know, how are we running our businesses? What are the tips and tricks we have? We, you know, actively amongst members, we will bounce things to other people that are not our in our lane, you know, because understanding where you are in an industry, understanding your strengths, you can pass on work that doesn't really, that's going to anyways pull you out of your safe space. So to get back to your question, this association exists and continues to exist because there's a need for it. The needs change over the years or modify a little bit, but they continue to, it continues to exist.
Anybody else wants to have a take on this?
I would like to add, and I agree 100% with Mary, is the openness of the members, the people who join. I remember when I joined, I was so excited. This is the best thing that had happened to me, to be able to join this group of people. And seeing that we were not just talking to the DSPs or LSPs, but we were also interested in, as it was mentioned, working with all the other areas that had to do with the language sector, getting involved with universities, getting involved with training at the time that we work a lot at the beginning at ALIA with the training piece. So there was a lot of brainstorming and education and growth. And I think when you ask, why did you join? I love to learn. I am curious. And we want, most of us that are here, we want to do things right. We want to get better. We want to provide better service for our clients, right? And that really united us. And that was, I think, that openness and, you know, mindset that we had as a team, it has kept CLIA going for the 24 years.
I'd also like to add that you can tell there's value because most of us are longtime members since the inception, like 24 years ago. So there must be value because we're all still members.
That's right. That's right. Paid members, let me add.
Also active in committees and working and supporting. And we have many, I'm seeing on the screen here, Peter and Andrea and Paul has been since the very beginning as well, and quite a few members. It's incredible the work that all these people have done throughout the years in the different initiatives that CLIA has supported.
100%. Now, for those who are listening to our conversation, either here on during the meeting we're having today or later on as the podcast gets published, CLIA operates largely behind the scene, as you and I know that. Advocacy, standards, certifications, government relationships. Most of the industry benefit from the work we do without knowing that this work exists. So the association, for instance, as an example, has driven key initiatives, including CGSB, language service standard, and the industry certification framework, etc. There's a lot of unglamorous work that we do that are perhaps our members are not fully aware or apprehensive. You know, they don't have the appreciation or at least how much work it goes into these initiatives behind the scene. Let me ask this question then. Because we do a lot of work and not all of our members are aware of the type of work we do as an association, what is behind the scene contribution that you are most proud of? The thing that moved the needle, but you know, nobody applauded it too much. Let me start with Maryse, if you don't mind. Hopefully I didn't put you on the spot with this question, Maryse.
Well, you know, you just gave me my soapbox, right?
I know I did.
Here I go. We are, you know, very intent on raising the bar at CLIA, right? We talk a lot about business practices, and we have since the beginning. And not to go unmentioned, there was a precursor to ALIA, which was ACTI. So anybody interested, you guys can always knock on my door or Paul's door or Lola's door. Anyways, but getting back to then when all the money flowed into ALIA, we jumped on that bandwagon. But we've since been able to participate heavily in standardization. And it is something that helps us bring back tons of valuable information to Canada. And I can tell you that we are not slouches. Where ISO is concerned, half the board is involved with standardization. Lola is involved. Paul is involved. Peter is part of the Canadian Mirror Committee. So it's something that we are all knowledgeable about, but participate in actively. And I invite all of you to join the Canadian Mirror Committee and all of you to join us to do this work, because Canadians show up at the international meetings and we're a weight to be taken seriously, because we show up, we're smart, we're well-read, we're educated, and we bring a lot of information to the table, and we bring a lot of Canadian reality to the table. So I really do invite everyone to join us. Thank you for my soapbox. I'll step down now.
Lola, what's your take on this?
I would think standardization, and not just the standardization, but the advocacy that goes with that standardization, the client education, the public education, and creating those connections. For me, relationships are so important, that making those relationships in terms of, yes, you know, the CGSB was created. Now there needs to be a framework to certify it under CGSB. And that was also created by CLIA, the framework to certify. And then now we are going to connect with those organizations that create requests for proposals, and we are going to inform them. And we have been doing this all along. So it's not just, yes, we created the work, we created the standards, but we are also doing advocacy towards raising that bar, and advocacy towards connecting and brainstorming together and seeing how can we support those who are in the education sector, for example, and so on. So the connection between the two, I think it's one of the big things that we have worked.
Absolutely. Kim, anything?
I was going to just jump in with a recent example. You know, forever there was always a little bit of friction between the industry and the professional associations. And over the past number of months and years, we've really have actively been trying to bridge those gaps, and you can see today that a lot of our panels include members from CITIC, from OTIAC, and you know, a few years ago this was something that you know you would not readily see, and not just the association, but the industry, the sector in Canada as a whole benefits when everybody is at the same table talking about the same thing. And again, you know, this is an example of something that is happening actively, but maybe not enough. It's not highlighted, the process, but you'll see the results at the end. And I think that's incredible to see.
No, thanks, Peter, for adding that. Go ahead.
In the last few years, we've been reaching out to international associations. So we're spreading our wings. We're going global much more than we had before. So adding on to what Peter said, within Canada, yes, we are grouping people together and trying to get us all to work together, but we're also reaching out to our international brothers and sisters, so to speak.
Absolutely. We've got a few partnerships out there with Elia and the rest of the associations around the world. No, I really appreciate that. And thanks for the color there, Peter. I really appreciate the context. Now, I know every association goes through what do you call the dark days. And I remember there was one or two particular instances, but just one, I think. What was the moment the association almost did not make it? I remember this one. I don't know if you guys recall that one. But then we pulled through. It's like watching an action movie, you know, just before you think the main actor is going to fall apart, and then he pulls through, and then, you know, the current close on a good note. Can somebody take us back, talk a little bit about this one?
Lola, I think you were really involved with this.
Yes, I was. At the time, I was both vice president and then became president of ALI at the time. So as Kim was mentioning, there was a point in time that we stopped receiving funding from the government. ECLIA started with a funding from Industry Canada and the Government of Canada. And then this was a project that it was a five-year project that was extended for a bit. And it was in 2012, more specifically, when we were from having a $5 million, you know, funding from having zero. And as you can imagine, like from the operational perspective, it becomes a challenge because we had a staff, we had an office in Gatineau and so on, and we have to change completely how we work. And then a lot of our team members, like Kim, like we all know the work that Kim did because she was the treasurer to recover. And even though the main point of CLIA is not the finances, but all of us are business owners and we know how important that is, right? So we managed to get together, and as members of the board, members of CLIA start from zero again after we were already very, very successful in the first few years and continued the work. And I think the most important thing was the commitment from our members to the mission. The commitment to the mission, that was the most important thing, because we knew and we were in the process of publishing the structure for the standards. For example, the standards with CGSB was created in 2008. 2010, we created the framework for certification. So in 2012, we were just at the very beginning of that framework. And some of our companies, some of our members were already getting certified, but just at the early stages. And we stayed together and we figured that out. And the certification became very successful. We even renewed over and over as needed. So I think it was us staying together and going through this, the difficulties that we had at the moment and believing in the mission. So, but Kim and Maurice, if you have anything else to add, I think it's mission-based.
I was on the board, but I wasn't on the executive committee. So I know how hard you guys worked and funded, basically privately funded Alia at the time. So I think that's where the actors were about to fall off the cliff. And then Lola and Kim and Anne, all kind of snatched the hero or heroes from the abyss. So it took its, it took its bumps. But as I was saying earlier, the association came into existence because it was needed. It continues to exist and now today thrives because it answers many of the things we've talked about, right? The need for cohesion, the need for being involved in, certain portfolios and pushing, continuing to push forward on in those areas. And there's other really nice, we didn't talk about it, but Lola and Paul have been involved with OCCI, which is another standardization format, but now taking it nationally. These were embryonic. And through time, through collaboration, through good intentions, brought people together. And I think having this place of cohesiveness, right, that CLIA brings, permits all these things, these great works to take place. And of course, nothing's perfect, right? But it's got to start somewhere and then it grows. And this is the place where it gets to grow.
Now, Kim, from your side, I mean, every association struggles with this, right? So I'm talking about the financial health of any association. And given the fact, for those audience who are listening to this, we are an association of transition companies, not association of individual who are interested. There are various categories of membership and everybody can become a member, depends on the category that you want to be a member of. But primarily, it is an association for a transition companies. And in Canada, there is no plethora of this. I'm assuming it's about 150 members, maybe, of our association currently. We're looking for more members. If you are thinking of becoming a member of the Canadian Language Association, please give us a call or get on the website and become a member. But fiscal responsibility is big in any types of association. And I do recall, because I've been a member for almost 25 years now, I do recall times when the members themselves had to pitch in and put money in. And I remember I was in the office of, the name Larry Rogers, probably still sound familiar to some of you guys, where he signed a big fat check, he called it, to the association. So people were contributing contribution is not a charity, is not one of those things. It was more, I believe, I put my vote in because I believe in the association. Hence, I'm putting my money where my mouth is. This is how this thing and I'm sure others have done the same thing. I just witnessed one instance. From your perspective, Kim, you're the treasurer. You've been the treasurer for many years. What does it take to manage on a financial side something small as CLIA, for instance, and keep us in line. And I know I'm one of the guilty ones. Keep us in line. Don't spend outside of the lines kind of thing. So beside cracking the whip there, Kim.
Well, yes, that was mostly what I did was crack the whip. And I remember there's a running joke because Maurice wanted cheese at an event. And I said, no cheese. So
I still hear that. No cheese for you. What is that?
That was not in the budget. We had a strong eye on our budget. We were very, very fiscally responsible. But a lot of it came down to, at one point in time, we did have to go to members and say, look, we need more than your membership fee. Could you consider donating extra funds? So that did happen. But the most important part was the in-kind, all the volunteer hours that so many of us put in with no pay. And to this day, this is all volunteer. All the time spent, the organizing of World Speak, it is all volunteers. And it could not be done without the members and the board of directors. I think to me, the money's one thing, but even if we had money, it couldn't be done without the volunteers and the hours we all put in.
I mean, anecdotally, there's I can't say the name, but I'll tell you what the association is, Market Research Industry Association, so you guys can figure this out. A few years ago, they had a conference booked in the Fairmont in Vancouver, and they had over-budgeted the conference, and how many people are going to show up, and the number of people showed up are less. 2 weeks later, after the event, which I attended, by the way, they declared bankruptcy. So, you know, keeping track of what we're doing as an association, what's logical, what's not logical, and focus on, and I keep, when I had the honor and the pleasure to be a president of this association, I used to use this phrase, I would love to deliver this association to the next hand in a better shape than I took it. And as an association, I feel like every member around us here had the same, ideas that we are going to deliver this association to the next generation in a better shape than we received it from the people before us. And that forward looking, that this is not a couple of years down the road kind of thing. This is, it's going to be here forever, and having that future outlook. I think it's phenomenal the way we viewed this thing. It was not viewed as, I want to put it on my business card. It was not viewed as, you know, I want to use it to promote myself. In fact, and I'm always reminded by the bylaws from Lola, he's our bylaw custodian. We're not allowed to do that. We are volunteering our way into the association without any other added benefit to that. We do it because of passion, not because of any other benefits of it. Do you want to say anything there, Peter?
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to say, you know, being your vice president for a number of years, this mantra stuck with me, and we have managed to carry that along forward to all of our, you know, to EC, to all of our board members. And again, forward looking, it's very important for us to make sure that we're fiscally responsible. Everything that we do has to do that. And you know, as Kim mentioned, the volunteer hours, like the people you see around the room, these are all high level professionals, you know, business owners, and they volunteered their time, they volunteered their energy, and this association really would not be functioning without them. And you know, we're looking for more members to come and contribute. If anybody in Canada has a language service company and they're not part of CLIA, they're really missing out. I mean, they're missing out on friendships, they're missing out on opportunities, they're missing out on having a seat at the table instead of being on the menu, as we've heard over and over again today. So really, this is the place for it. And I encourage anybody who is in this language sector in Canada to join us, to find out if there's a level of membership that they can be, that applies to them, and bring their voice to the table and be part of this amazing, amazing group of people.
Absolutely. Anybody else would like to add anything else?
Well, I love that Peter mentioned about the benefits, because we are sharing about the contributions that we have done over the years. And it's really, really important to point out the remarkable benefits that we get as members of CLIA. And can you just say it? We are here after 24 years for a reason. The amount that we learn, that we make our businesses better. Because I remember when we were in the, continue to be in the Standards Committee, we were developing those documents and having those conversations. And I would go back to my office and improve my systems. Mm-hmm. And many of us have done that. And many of us continue to grow because of CLIA. So this is really the place to be. And I think we really need to focus on all the benefits. And I see on my screen, even though we have started the three of us, but I see Andrew and I see Paul. And we have such an incredible team. Like you're talking about the friendships and those connections. And I'm not sure if they want to share a couple of ideas as well, because we have such an incredible group here.
Absolutely. Andre.
Yeah, I want to go next. Actually, I didn't want to, because I tend to talk too much, right? If I start, I don't stop. But I love this group. It's like a family, the second family for me, and we've been working together for many years. I also want to highlight initiatives that are very strategic, especially for our members. LSPs in Canada are not big companies. Most of them are very small business. And that's the type of support and help the association can provide them. There are two initiatives, as we speak, are in progress and should be released very soon. One of them is a business owner toolkit that actually, it's designed on the size of the business of an LSP. If you're very small, you're mid-sized, you're in a fast growth, how to deal with potential challenges if you went through or going through to help you navigate through that successfully. That is one big initiative and project that we have been working on in 2025 and 2026 that will be released very soon only to our members. And there's another one also that we have started also working on this year that's almost ready, is the pricing guideline. These are initiatives to help also educate our market.
And the webinars.
And well, the webinars, certainly the webinars is ongoing, and Maurice is doing phenomenal with that. So there's a lot of education and, like Lola said, advocacy that the association is doing. And not just only our members get the benefit of that, any LSP is getting the benefit of that. Well, when we stood up for the standards last year and the year before when we worked on the CGSB, it's not only to the advantage of our members, everyone gets the benefit. And like Kim said, when I first joined, I thought I'm going to get paid and say, oh my gosh, I have some extra revenue now. And I've been waiting since 2017. You haven't paid me a penny now.
It's in the IOU bank.
Robin, I actually do have a couple of words as well. So in terms of it, you asked at one point how we came to be, and I remember one quote, and everybody here, I think, will remember the name and know Donald Barabé. He said, while he was still at the Bureau, you know, translation is the world's second oldest profession. Yet at that time that he said it, the professional orders were massive and companies had no voice. And I think what you're seeing now with CLIA and where we're going is that this is really becoming more and more important for us to unify as enterprises, to really position and move our industry. So it is really nice to have so many professionals here from the orders on the call today. Now, that was the first thing I wanted to chat about. The second is we've been talking a lot about translation, but this is the language industry, and we do have a very important part in the community interpreting or interpreting sector. So at CLIA, we are primarily translation and or consecutive or community interpreting services providers. And on that front, I've been chair of those committees for most of the existence here. We've rolled out the National Standards Guide for Community Interpreting Services and the certification related thereto, which is available through CLIA. And there are so many different things. I mean, that committee also created the Ontario Coalition of Community Interpreting, which is going national. We have an accreditation schema that really encourages post-secondary education. And we've just actually expanded on it and are going national shortly, so stay tuned. But more importantly for all of us, I think, and it's been spoken by many of the people on this call, whom I'd love to call not only friendly competitors, but also friends. There's a lot of personal and professional growth involved by being involved with an association and joining. I know, you know, not only have I increased the caliber of my inner friend circle with friendly competitors, but to Lola's point earlier, you learn, you grow, and you implement before everybody else, which actually helps you in your business world and also in your personal one. So if you are interested in learning and growing and making some great friends, please do join us. I think the link was provided, and we do hope to see you and getting involved. And if you are in the interpreting sector, please reach out. We'd love to get some input and some advice and some help. So thanks again.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it. And thank you, Andre, for the context, and Peter. Let's move on a little bit to the next segment, if you don't mind. What are the milestones, if you don't mind, that we start with Marie's, that you can think of? I know WorldSpeak is a milestone that started a few years ago now, but was there other milestones that you can think of should be added to the list of milestones for CLIA?
Well, you want some added, or you
we have WorldSpeak is a milestone, but in your opinion, what do you think the milestones are?
WorldSpeak, what I like so much about it is that it really goes to reach what we're looking, what we're aiming for, right? Because the whole presentations this morning was really about the world, and Canada is totally poised to service the world with regards to language. I think we house so much language competency, both languages and technology and the like. So I love that. I go back to standards. Yeah, I'm sorry, that's my that's my soapbox, you know. Canadians have input so much content. I love it because it's a reflection of us. So is it a milestone? I think it is, the fact that we've been able to support it and be involved with it. We were always striving for best practices, and I think we've accomplished it by the CGSB being involved with the national standards for interpreting, community interpreting, with international standards such as ISO, which I am the chair of now.
I think ISO is mainly Canadians. I mean, from the names that I see on the ISO committees.
Absolutely. And Julio, who doesn't seem to be on here right now, I don't know where he is. He's about to become our next leader in ISO. I'm letting the cat out of the bag here, but very proud that, you know, it's going to get another Canadian leadership. I've been at it for 9 years. I'm so happy this another Canadian head is going to lead. So I think that in the way of milestones, I don't think it was set out that way, but it's become that because we are so present.
These are events, I'm assuming,
survived, that you know, we survived all these years, you know. I think that's a milestone in itself. I mean,
in my opinion, the way we shifted altogether would change the way how we operate during COVID, for instance. I remember we used to have a weekly call with the government. We used to have every week, we used to sit down together collectively, industry and government, and trying to figure out how do we serve our Canadian citizens by the best, or to our best ability. What are the expectation? How much volume? Who do we need to activate? We, you know, here is an entire industry in Canada with all of our employees, freelancers, etc., moved from being in an office to work remotely overnight. That adaptability, in my opinion, that shift that happened during COVID had given us the opportunity to figure out we're more capable than we think we are, just because we're able to move mountains, basically, to continue operation, continue providing the service. And we don't, you know, some of our customers probably don't realize, but this is an essential service in Canada.
Very true.
We found that out during COVID.
Yeah. That's
right. And we have had that flexibility and that adaptability that you're mentioning all over in our history, right? We used to have the showcase, if you remember the showcase. Then we joined Translation World, and we have done so many things, and we identified, is this what we need? Is it working? And if not, okay, let's change. Let's do something different, right? And let's figure out what are the needs of our members, because we are always thinking about our members. And I agree, of course, I am also a raving fan of standards. I agree with Marie that those standards are amongst our biggest milestones. One of the things that it's also not very well known, at the ISO level, there were no interpreting standards. And the very first interpreting standard that came in was based and started from the National Standards of Canada. From there, it evolves. And of course, now there are multiple standards for interpreting at ISO, and wonderful work that has been done there, but it started from a Canadian document, and we need to be very, very proud of that.
And shout out to Lola. We wouldn't have the National Standards Guide unless she actually took control of managing the so many people that were involved in creating it. I mean, it really is a collaborative thing. So
thank you, Paul. And one other thing that I wanted to mention is, like you see here on the screen, those of us who have been there forever, but I'm so excited that we have brand new voices. Like we have new blood in the board. And one example that I want to give, she's off screen, maybe she's having lunch, but Chantal, for example, she's newer to the board and she has been doing such an incredible work. So we really want to welcome new
people. Yeah, kudos to Chantal. Yeah, I've seen a lot of activities.
She's phenomenal, and here she is. Come on, Chantal. Like she has
come and join the group.
And she does such an incredible work, and you can see her passion, her dedication, the commitment, and that reflects what the members of the language industry do, right? Like we believe in the work that we do, and I love that from both old and new. So
maybe you have a couple of words too. I'm very lucky to be in this group. I'm really supported and I'm happy to be here.
Glad to have you amongst us. No, I appreciate it. Now, I want to talk to WorldSpeak a little bit, and I think I want to talk to the father, I call him, of WorldSpeak. Andre, how did the idea came about, if you don't mind, and how did it grow to what it is today?
Well, it's interesting. Starting in 2017, being on the board of CLIA and attending the conference every year was exciting for me, but it wasn't enough. Like you would see that we're only talking almost to each other, or we're talking just so narrow about just Canada. We're not looking so much abroad. And like Kim said, since a few years, we started branching out and having more partnerships internationally. And this is basically, by the way, these are milestones. Every partnership we did is a milestone. So I had a vision to say, well, we're actually one of the largest countries in the world. We're officially bilingual. We have the best universities. We have great technology companies. Unfortunately, some of them are being sold. I mean, I'm saying unfortunate just because of the Canadian identity, right? I'm so much on Team Canada. But again, I'm so proud to see that Canadians are innovators. And we needed a platform where we can have Canadian professionals, Canadian pioneers, Canadian elites in our industry to be talking to the international community of the language industry and bridging that by attracting business, by exporting business, by creating this network. So that event started about 4 years ago now. The first year wasn't an edition of WorldSpeak. It was a testing. And then it's been 3 years, consecutive years, successfully doing WorldSpeak. And again, it's a roadmap. Unfortunately, as I said this morning, it's not exactly what I envisioned for today to happen. In my mind, I actually stayed at the hotel last night because I'm in Ottawa. And I was looking at the LACLIMI and I sent a picture to the team on WhatsApp. I envisioned that we were celebrating a gala dinner, we'll be going to the casino later, having some drinks, showing up in the morning, a bit tipsy, and having this human conversation and the personal contact more than the virtual. Unfortunately, the conditions didn't help. Maybe because we invited Renato, like he said. Just a joke. No, but I really believe that WorldSpeak is another platform where we're having a little bit more different discussions than what you see at Lockword or at Gala. Although we did good partnerships with both of the associations last year, we were associated with Gala when they were in Montreal, and we're doing the same in Vancouver this year. So again, WorldSpeak has its own flavor, and it travels around Canada. For anyone who's part of this community or in the industry, they will actually get to see, like today, I was really fascinated by the presentations, the panels, the Dominique panel, all the panelists that we, this is a different type of discussions that we don't see in other associations happening. It's that level of transparency that I was looking at in WorldSpeak. And also it's another platform for companies to promote their technologies, not just technology, it could be, you know, anything. You could be an insurance company, a bank, anyone who would like to support that industry to be part of it.
And you know, like the word promote is very important, because most people would think, oh, you know what, Canadian industry is small industry. Everybody knows everybody. And, you know, I don't need to go to a conference to promote. No, you do. You do need to come to this convention. You need to come to this conversation, because if you're on the inside of this conversation, you have a better chance in promoting your whatever you're working on better than doing it from the outside of the of this conversation. This conversation is becoming, in my opinion, my humble opinion, is the center of gravity for the language discussion in Canada. And we've done a great job as an association of pulling, and that's based on the recommendation that I've heard over the years from our colleagues and our partners at the Federal Transition Bureau over the years, many CEOs that we've worked with, and they always focused on, let's bring the conversation with the other associations to the center, OTIAC, CITIC, et cetera, bring them into the fold. Let's have more good dialogues with them. We're not asking for people reporting to people and somebody being above somebody else on an equal footing, on an equal ground. Let's include you under the conversation, in the conversation.
And Robin, you know, I come from strategic sales, so I'm not recommending for companies, LSPs, not to attend outside industry events. They have to. This is where you go to promote your business. But internally, what we discuss together, and there's no gloves here between us as colleagues. I don't even call ourselves competitors. Paul may ask me a question. I may ask him a question. Maryse will call me, ask me a question. We exchange so much information. How you keep on selling? How do you innovate? How do you use technology, right? And again, we should be very transparent. If someone could do better than me, I'm happy for them, right? But the exchange, that bank sits together to discuss. By the way, I mean, we have representatives from the transition departments at the banks. They talk together. We should say that's a good platform to talk together as LSPs and language professionals. And like Peter mentioned, that partnership that we're doing also with the professional bodies like OTIAC, ETIO, CETIC, this is really to work together hand in hand, not to work, you know, in silos. And it should be into the benefit of not just the businesses, but also to the professionals in this industry. WorldSpeak is that platform. It is not just for LSPs to meet together like at the conference we used to do before. It is an open invitation to anyone who wants to collaborate and come in. I think we have presenters also today from like IBM. We had presenters before from the BDC. So this is what exciting. You get also exposure to other than just the industry solutions and what we are designing here, and you get inspired what happens outside of that.
And I just like to add, you know, as big of a milestone as WorldSpeak is, and as, I mean, we're seeing the influence that we're having and the level of engagement, but at the same time, CLIA is also continuing its engagement across Canada. We're holding rendezvous, and we have one in Vancouver. We're planning for another one, West Coast, possibly one on the East Coast. So we are doing both at the same time. We're reaching out globally, and we're staying connected and building bridges nationally at the same time. So, these things are happening at the same time, and we're not, our focus is not, it's not shifting to one versus the other. And I think that's an amazing thing to have the ability to do that, to have the members to support that. So that is, another indication, another milestone, if you will.
Yeah. Well, I mean, years ago, I mean, you guys have heard me say this before, right? We can't be an association of Toronto, Ottawa, and Montreal. We have to be a coast-to-coast association. And because we are the Canadian Language Industry Association, we're not Montreal, Ottawa Association. And so from that perspective, and I'm cognizant of your time, still have 6 more minutes here to go. I just want to go around the room, if you don't mind, just reflect back on the early days. Again, one more time, if you could go back and tell yourself something on the day CLIA was first started, what would that be? I'm going to start with Paul this time, and then we'll just do the way you guys appear on my screen here.
It's going to take a while.
It's going to take a while. Is that what you got to tell yourself? It's going to take a while.
If I think back at the personal journey, I think back to a good number of years before ALIA, with the ACTI, and working closely, most closely with Maryse, and actually also Larry, your previous boss at LexiTech, in creating a national association to develop standards for service providers. We developed an outline And, you know, things change and evolve, to Marisa's point earlier, but a lot of it stays the same. And ideally, and I think one of the biggest learnings for me in the moment in time that we're at now is it may have taken longer than we expected before, but if we want to actually thrive and grow right now, we need to flip that upside down. We need to go fast, really fast. So
glad to have you on this conversation then.
Glad to be here.
Kim, what do you think? What would you go back and tell yourself? You're on mute, by the way.
Wow. It's kind of hard to follow Paul on that, but it did take a long time and there were a lot of peaks and valleys. Just like in our own businesses, it was the same thing. There were so many milestones in there, some good, some not so good. But we're like Paul says, I think we're right now, we're going to have to move faster just to keep pace with what's going on in the world.
Correct. Peter?
So for me, it's not so far in the past. Only a few years ago, I guess the rebranding from Alia to Clia, that was a very, a big moment for me. It happened during COVID, during the lockdown. I think we've always wanted to have a Canadian identity attached to Alia. Everywhere we went, people would ask, what is Alia? So we had to always explain that it has to do with the Canadian. So I think that transition was a big shift. And I don't think it would have happened unless we were in COVID and we were just zoomed in on daily on how to make this association more reflective of its members.
Appreciate it. Andre?
Well, to me, to add to what everyone said, it was pretty much the people, the lovely people around here. I mean, there's a bigger group that are not on the screen. They are part of this collaborative work. And what you learn, and like Paul said, we all grow by learning from each other. So that's what I enjoy mostly. I always say when I go back and I think, what are the things that I could change? I always say, I wish I knew. So we all wish if we knew what could be happening so we prevent them. But unfortunately, that's what we had to do. As I said, we had to adapt on the go. And that's why everyone deserves a medal in our industry.
Thank you.
Or therapy.
Or therapy. I love that. Maurice?
Well, I think I had to go back and tell myself something. I might have told myself, pick your battles. Swing it.
Everybody's
all the time.
Laughing because everybody feels it.
Yeah, exactly. I come out swinging all the time, and I might have just focused a little more. But.
Lola?
For me, if I would go back 24 years, I would say transformation will happen here. Stay on the path. You're going to have the best relationships, the best learning, and keep going. It's Clia or Alia in the past have provided so much for so many of us and will continue to do. We will decide on the speed depending on what we need, but it has been really transformational for our sector.
And one last question, we still have one more minute here. Who is in the industry, someone you may not be on this conversation today, who is not probably with us today, deserve a credit to what Clia became today? I can just let me get started. Two names, Ann Rutledge and Larry Rogers, in my opinion, they stay in my head. They were instrumental in embedding, Larry embedded this into me, and I think I'm trying to pass it on to others. So there you go. I guess this whatever it is, it just keeps going from there. Anybody else wants to take that on? Lola?
I can quickly share. So for me, it was Sharon Steinberg. I mean, I thought I was her VP for a number of years, and I really enjoyed working with her. And she really worked tirelessly, around the clock for this association. So
yeah, we miss Sharon.
And I would say every single member of the EC in the past 24 years who have served, because it's a second job. Basically, that's what it is. And all of you have, in one way or another, experienced it. It is a lot of work, and we do it out of love and passion and commitment to Clia. So every member of, and the board of directors, of course, but the EC more specifically, it's...
I used to do it for the love of coffee, Lola, but that's okay, though.
But what you come away with, the knowledge of your industry, the coalescence of all this information coming to the board and coming to the EC pays for itself.
Any names that we've forgotten there, Maurice, that you'd like to mention from the past?
There was another president, I believe it was Jocelyne Bocou, wasn't it, after Dan Vincent? Lola, do you remember? I'm blipping out, but otherwise, I think we got all the past presidents, and the past presidents have shouldered a lot.
And one who was president and then executive director, Gonzalo Peralta. Gonzalo was really instrumental to Alien Back in Time.